This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And good afternoon, Rutherford County. Absolutely beautiful day today. I want to let you know that this is the Greg Tucker Show, and this part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, and that's 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard, and you can reach them at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And if you're having trouble staying at home on your own and not able to complete the duties that you've normally been able to do without any problems, give them a call. Melissa Warren started this business so she could come into your home and make sure that you could still maintain a quality of life within your own home. So please give them a call if you fit in that description, and I'll give you the telephone number again, 713-4639. Greg, it's always good to have you on, or you letting me be on your show. I guess that's what I should say.
No, I don't think so. I appreciate your reference to what a pretty day it is. I looked at my rain gauge yesterday. I've had 6 inches of rain since the first of the year. And you know, all our lives, January has always been that dry winter month.
And usually it's a little bit wider than what it is now. I remember growing up in this area, and it wouldn't be unusual to have 6, 7, 8 inches a foot of snow this time.
Well, we had sleds back then.
We did.
A sled now would just be a garage ornament.
Yeah. You know, sometimes things just automatically brighten up your day. I saw the prettiest lady come in here just a few minutes ago, and I think that you probably know her, don't you?
Yeah, and you're flattering me. She always makes me look good.
She's one of the nicest, sweetest ladies, and has meant so much to the community here. Actually, both of you have taken part in so many of the arts and other things. We talk about history, but all of that is the history of Rutherford County complements itself because of all the great people that have made it what it is right now. And you and I were talking about something a minute ago. Of course, we always go from one direction to the other. And I was kind of boasting a little bit about my heritage and talking about Captain William Lytle, the D.A.R.,
right,
and being one of the people who made Murfreesboro what it is today.
Absolutely.
And you were kind of busting my bubble a little bit.
Well, I had the honor of speaking to the William Lytle chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution last Saturday at their monthly meeting, and it was a little bit intimidating because they told me the subject they wanted me to talk about, William Lytle, and of course I know that there are those in the chapter know an awful lot about him, so I acknowledge that you know, they certainly knew a lot of the story of William Lytle. And it's interesting because there's really not a lot known. He was not a public figure. He didn't run for office. You know, he was a private figure, but he certainly was a capable revolutionary captain, and was also a very, how would you say, devoted family man. He took care of his family. You can see that in the later history of his family. But like is very common with local historic figures anywhere, there develops a folklore around the, what would you say, the blanks in the history to explain it. And so what I did for them was not to diminish the character at all, but to help us better understand. I just took some of the story that we all kind of hear and heard when we were kids and on, and pointed out the difference between some of the facts and the fiction. And it's entertaining to begin with the plaque down here at the corner of Memorial and Broad, which is marking the location of the old plantation home, the Lytle home. And the first phrase of it says, William Lytle, a captain in the Continental Army. And then goes on to say that he received a very large land grant in this immediate area for his services, part of which became the original Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. And I pointed out that the only part of that that is correct is that he was a captain in the Continental Army. Mm-hmm. It was his brother, his older brother, who was a lieutenant colonel, who received the grant. Captains were not entitled to over 7,000 acres of land, but any lieutenant colonel who served in that revolutionary period from North Carolina was given 7,200 acres. Mm-hmm. And the grant to Archibald Lytle, he obviously had some pull because he got some of the best land in the county. He got the West Fork of the Stones River. Mm-hmm. Ran down the middle of his property. It wiggles around, but his property, his grant was laid out so that he had that. But the eastern edge of it didn't come across Lytle Creek here where Murfreesboro is. The way William Lytle got that was his brother died in 1799 without a will. And the property was divided among his seven heirs. And William Lytle, while still in North Carolina, where all the heirs were, very methodically went to each one of the heirs and bought back for himself their seventh. So he reassembled the grant and then came over here and began making his home there.
He was actually the benefactor of the grant. It just wasn't direct.
And he apparently had to spend a little money to get it.
Yes,
because
yes.
He bought the that from his, I'm sure they were all relatives.
Does that include all the way back over to the Hoard property where it sits now, or actually how it's been cut up by the interstate?
It would be very close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure would.
That is a great piece of land.
Yeah, and it extended down towards the Armstrong grant, but there was a gap between it. And Colonel Hardy Murphy, who was a shrewd businessman as well as a Revolutionary War figure, he bought the property in between the, and again, going to probably some of his subordinates and buying up their grants. He pretty much encircled Lytle and encircled what became Murfreesboro. But there was about 250 acres in the midst of all that that was left out. And of course, the old surveys, it was hard to be deadly accurate back in those days. And about 1808, William Lytle, this is well after the Revolutionary War, obviously, and well after the North Carolina grants were made, apparently identified it and got Tennessee to grant him that unclaimed land. So he picked up an additional 250 acres adjacent to his property and encircled by the Murfree holdings. So when the plaque down at the corner says a portion of this original grant eventually became Murfreesboro, it's not correct. It was land in that Tennessee grant, which was just a couple of years before the decision made to move the county seat, that became Murfreesboro. And then, of course, you and I have talked before about the Hugh Robinson, the surveyor, making a mistake and overlapping into Murfree's property and then finally working that out 6 years later. But there also is confusion about the war record. And again, he had an admirable war record, but not what many people have thought and written. To add to the confusion, the founder of Cincinnati, if you go up to Cincinnati and visit with their historical society, local history, and ask them, well, who is credited as the original founder of Cincinnati in Ohio? It's William Lytle.
Wow.
It is not our William Lytle, but is William Lytle, frequently spelled the same way. I've also seen it spelled differently, the Lytle name.
Is it also spelt Little?
Yeah.
Littl.
Some of the Lytle family, particularly back in North Carolina, spelled it Little. Mm-hmm. And I have seen the founder of Cincinnati, unrelated, but I've seen it spelled different ways as well. At least as far as we know, they were unrelated. Now, if you ever see that William Lytle was a member of George Washington's elite corps of officers right around him, that's the Cincinnati founder, not the Murfreesboro Lytle. But you do, for instance, I've seen historic writings, some of our local historians, where they put our William Lytle at the Battle of Stony Point up in New York. No. Murphy was there, but Lytle wasn't, at least not
our Lytle. Hardy Murphy was up there?
Yeah, he was one of the figures in that. And it's another interesting story, exactly what happened there, the tactical use of the forces there. But Lytle, our Lytle, spent all of his time, a good part of it, under his brother's command. His brother was what we would today call a brigadier general, but back then the lieutenant colonel had the brigade. And within the brigade, there were companies, and Lytle had one of the companies. Mm-hmm. They fought all through North Carolina and South Carolina. And if you read the history of the Revolutionary War, it actually was two wars. There were different British leadership and different American leadership in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the war, in my opinion, was won twice because they pushed the British back out through Savannah, mm-hmm. and Washington, of course, defeated the British up in the Virginia North area. Briefly on Stony Point, which is interesting, again, our character Hardy Murphy, you'll see sometimes that he's credited with leading the charge which retook Stony Point. Stony Point was like Gibraltar. It sticks out into the Hudson River.
Mm-hmm.
And by fortifying that point, the British controlled the river. Hardy Murphy was chosen by the leadership, and this is directly under Washington. Washington was not in that battle, but the people were working directly under his command. Hardy Murphy was kind of like our favorite tank commander in Normandy,
Patton.
Mm-hmm. Hardy Murphy was designated to do the fake.
Mm-hmm.
The feint, F-E-I-N-T, the mm-hmm. feint.
Mm-hmm.
And what Murphy did, he led a force of North Carolina regulars
mm-hmm.
that went straight at the point, right down the neck. And he essentially faked the charge,
mm-hmm.
drew out the British.
Mm-hmm.
The British repelled the charge, unfortunately killed a whole lot of his men, took the rest of them captives, and took Murphy captive.
Hmm.
What was going on was Washington's tacticians had two more forces who went through the muck and the mire and the mm-hmm. swamp and came from left and right and came in behind the British force because it had been pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
Tactically, a very interesting maneuver. So while they were capturing Murphy and his men and destroying a lot of his brigade, the other two took the fort and had the British outside having to fight their way back into their own fortress there, and of course prevailed. And Murphy was released and apparently was not harmed or not seriously harmed. That really was his high point of his contribution. And I would say that's significant, being the one who did the feint and paid the sacrifice. But others are credited with, you know, leading the charge that actually took the fort.
People don't think about it a lot of times about officers, like you said, a colonel and above. They actually benefit from war financially because, one thing I was going to ask you, at what point did we do away with that where a high-ranking official in the service actually was able to receive the spoils of war, you might say, because having that much land given to them that they were able to receive. And then, of course, I look at it back, you know, in some ways they deserve it, but you think about all these thousands and thousands of guys that died on the very front who received nothing, some of them mm-hmm. That were able to live through it or came out maimed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like it was kind of an imbalance there.
Yeah, it perhaps was more egalitarian back following the Revolution. Of course, North Carolina had a motive. And that was, well, they were trying to clear their books of any debts they had, but also they wanted this area populated. Mm-hmm. So by giving away, and the United States has done that all the way across the West. Mm-hmm. You know, all the early landowners were claiming it or getting it granted one way or another. And it's interesting, too, there is, I can't tell you the exact numbers, but there was a table, depending upon your rank. And if you were just a simple private, you still were entitled to 640 acres.
That's not bad.
Not bad. At the time, it was going for about 50 cents an acre. Mm-hmm. But in equivalent money, that was, you know, good money. And if you go through the grant records, you can see where the senior officers who had the incentive with these great big holdings and also probably some money available were buying up all the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. So the Murphree, when he got, at the time of his death, I'm told that he had over 70,000 acres that he had acquired through grant or primarily by buying the grants of the lesser officers. A captain, by the way, was entitled to approximately 2,800 acres, still enough to get you going.
Well, actually, you talk about the 600. If you were able to get it in the right location, you could make a good living off of that.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of them did come over and settle on those smaller grants. But an awful lot of them were looking for the quick money. And again, you can see that in the transfers. You know, the grants were hardly made, and they were being flipped several times. Mm-hmm. The Ruckers, who were very prominent early settlers in the area, the four Rucker brothers, they had massive holdings on the north side, but none of that was granted to the Ruckers. All of that had come through purchase, acquisition, and passing on. In fact, their father, I think, was the one who had assembled it, and then the four brothers came over and settled here.
Well, so many of them had their homes in what was then North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then as it expanded, was there any conflict at all between the ones who had came in Tennessee and were wanting to establish a new state and cut themselves off from the North Carolina part?
Well, no, I don't think that was a big struggle, because North Carolina was not able. I mean, look at the barrier that stood between what's now Tennessee and what's North Carolina.
In the mountains.
Yeah, I think North Carolina was aware that they could not really, in those days, control, police, or handle, you know, mm-hmm. that much. Where I thought you were going to say, there were people over here before these land grants.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Tennessee began to recognize if someone was there and had been there for a period of, you know, it was more than 10 years, and had worked it and built, they would favor them over a claim that had never been developed.
So it had to actually end up in court.
Yeah, oh yeah. There was a lot of judicial activity just working out. First the boundaries.
Might have known we'd have an attorney involved somewhere.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Whatever the government does makes more work for the attorneys. There was a grant to Hall, a family, and I can't tell you just which one of the, what was the name of the original grantee, but over on the east side of the county. And I think you remember some of the Hall descendants. In fact, I'm reading recently, it was described as an early pioneer family.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I'm correct that a remnant of that original grant is what became the Girl Scout camp.
Oh, over off here, of Woodbury Highway?
Yeah, over here north of Woodbury Highway, because Dr. Hall, that was his farm or property there. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I can't say that for certain, but I have an inkling that that's
Miss Mary Hall's dad.
Yeah, yeah. There was another relative of that, of the Halls, that you and I were discussing earlier, because you and he have some common experience. And I love his name. I'm not even sure how we say it, but spelled J-E-P-T-H-A, Jephthah. Jephthah Hall.
Where in the world did that name come from?
Who knows? And he was called in the newspaper accounts and such, Jep, J-E-P.
Yeah.
But Jep had an unusual experience in terms of employment. He got a job that was in part vacant, because he killed the guy who had that job before him. Now, there may have been some in between. But are you familiar with the name Joseph Arnold, Joseph E. Arnold? I'll give you a time period. We're talking early this century, early 1900s.
Joseph Arnold. No, it's not.
Joseph Arnold in 1910. Well, he was a farmer originally, but in that early decade was the chief of police for Murfreesboro. And, of course, back then, remember we talked about 1900s not long ago when there were finally gave the chief of police two officers. So I imagine the entire workforce at that time, the police department was still the chief and two or maybe three officers.
Mm-hmm.
And this meant that Joseph Arnold, the chief of police in 1911, had to be on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Had to work a beat like the other two. Jeb Hall in 1911 was a deputy sheriff. And this story has been told by several. I may know a little more detail than some, but if our listeners hadn't heard it before, it's part of our lore. Jeb Hall and Joe Arnold got involved in a an arrest at the same time. And back then, even today, there's something of an overlapping jurisdiction between the sheriff, who had the county jurisdiction at the time, and this police chief. And they brought into the jail, which was down about 400 West Main. In fact, it was only recently torn down. That's where the original jail was. I think what was torn down.
And there was one before it.
Yeah, right, I was going to say what was torn down probably wasn't the same building, but in the same location, 400. They showed up with one or several prisoners. And it's not clear whether they came from different directions or whether Jep brought the prisoner in and Joseph came down to be part of it or to take control. Or, but they brought in the prisoners. They took the prisoners back, and a fellow named Helton was the jailer. And as the story goes from Helton, they got to arguing about something. Now,
the sheriff and the chief.
The sheriff and the chief. Deputy sheriff and the chief of police get to arguing about something relating to the prisoners and the how the prisoners are to be handled. Later news reports noted that there was some bad blood already. But it escalated. And as they came out of the building, and one news report says there were no witnesses, but there was actually one eyewitness. As they came out of the building, they both drew their pistols and emptied them. Jep apparently kept his with only five rounds. He shot all five rounds. Arnold emptied his pistol, six rounds. Jep got shot in the ear and the knee. Arnold was apparently fatally wounded. Jep sounds like he was probably a better shot.
Probably weren't.
Arnold went running up West Main towards the courthouse, uphill, carrying several slugs. Went to Mr. Jetton, or Jeton.
Jeton.
And I'm not sure what the business was that Mr. Jeton had at that time. It was S.W. Jeton, but I know his wife later had the florist shop, so it may have been a florist shop. He goes in there seeking help. Several customers and others grabbed him up, and why they took him to the stable, I'm not sure, but they took him to the stable. A crowd of about 300 gathered, and he says, "Jeb Hall shot me and died." And there was quite a funeral and quite a bit going on. And as you would expect, at the insistence of some of the Arnold family, Jep was charged, murder one, first degree murder. And it took him 2 years to bring it to trial. And I wonder if Jep was in any way restrained or whether he continued his deputy sheriff duties. That would be interesting to know. 2 years later, they tried the case, and Pony, his nickname, Pony Woodruff, was an eyewitness, and Jep was acquitted, basically on a self-defense. I mean, it was a, they apparently decided it was a good, fair shootout. Interestingly enough, the judge at the time was Judge Ridley.
I wonder if it's related to Sam and Knox.
Actually, I think he was the father of the one you probably remember. Remember Granville Ridley?
Yes,
his father. His father was a lawyer and a judge, and then Granville, of course, was a very prominent attorney and politician later.
Sounded like the gunfight of L.K. Corral.
And apparently it was they decided it was a fair fight, and Jeff won, Arnold lost. A couple of years later, Jeff Hall was made chief of police for Murfreesboro. And apparently had a good career, well-respected.
It makes you wonder, how in the world could they have gotten into a conflict like that? Of course, I'm sure it was a jurisdictional thing, but even back then, the jurisdiction was still the sheriff, no matter where it was in the city or the county. But evidently, there must have been some personal feelings in that.
I think that's the key point. There probably was something that was behind it, so you didn't take an insult lightly. Mm-hmm. And Jeff, to put it in context, his brother-in-law was C.B. Arnett Sr., who had a meat market over on Vine Street. Mm-hmm. He was the grandfather of the late C.B. Arnett, our local historian that we're all very fond of. But it's not many people can say that, I got my job in part because I killed a guy that had it before me.
But things were a little bit different back then. But you go to 400 West Main Street, and there's a lot of history in that one address right there.
There sure is.
And I wish there was something to mark the time and the events of some of the things that occurred there on that one location.
Well, we've recently put up some markers around town, and I don't recall that one's been put there, but there ought to be a marker.
There should be something there.
There ought to be a marker there.
Just in the time that I was there and then listened to the stories before and all the interesting people that actually came on that property over the years, you could write 5 books on just the history of that one location.
Well, when we come back, why don't you tell us about one or two of those interesting characters?
It would take me 3 or 4 days. You know that, don't you? And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Golden Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside the Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministries and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Everly, they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And for a fair and honest evaluation, see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today at the Gold and Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646, and also they have a second store. It's at 5631 on the new Nashville Highway, and that's next to TriStar Motors.
This is Bill Bonner, property assessor of Rutherford County. In 2008, I ran my campaign on being fair and honest. And since that campaign, nothing has changed. I continue to be fair, honest, and treat everyone equal. I believe in Rutherford County, believe in giving back to the community. I'm running again and asking for your vote for property assessor. I love my job and serving you. Please vote for me as your property assessor for Rutherford County. I'm Bill Bonner, and I approve this message.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by AmeriCare Pest Control, the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, and the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna.
Aloha, this is Omni Hut.
Everything's made from scratch at the Omni Hut Restaurant. Here's Polly Walls.
I can buy a pre-made store commissary egg roll for less than I can produce my own, but they're not as good, so we stay with what we know. Start from scratch, fresh kitchen.
Traditional luau dinners, Tahitian tidbits, egg rolls, all made from scratch at the Omni Hut.
Come see us at 618 South Lowry Street, just inside Smyrna, near Nissan.
Looking now at Good Neighbor Events from WGNS, the Greenhouse Ministries is offering free tax preparation for anyone whose total household income is $50,000 or less per year. They have volunteers there to help you fill out those tax forms. That'll be now through Tax Day at the Greenhouse Ministries over on Spring Street. And the Hot Metal Show continues in the gallery at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro now through February the 2nd. It's a combination of weathered assemblages and sculpture. The gallery at the Center for the Arts is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 in the morning until 5 in the evening. Be sure to check with our local Red Cross about classes on CPR for both adults and infants. They're also offering babysitters training. The Red Cross here in town is at 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce location. Check with them about these classes. And Pat Whitaker is again offering the Tai Chi classes over at the Lane Agri-Park. They're on Wednesday mornings from 9 until 10, and the next 8-week session begins February the 1st. For information or to sign up, get with Pat Whitaker at the Lane Agri-Park, 898-7710. Those are Good Neighbor Events.
Smoked wings, barbecue, the redneck nachos, you know what I'm talking about. It's Kirk and Burt Smokehouse Grill on Kaysen Lane. Stop on in. Each day they've got great specials for you. Kirk and Burt Smokehouse Grill on Kaysen Lane here in Murfreesboro.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
Welcome back with us, and we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street, where they have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle. And we have just been invaded. This guy's come in here. He looked like he just stepped off of the street from some alley somewhere.
Yeah, it does look homeless,
doesn't it? He does. And Mr. Joseph Lee.
Hey, Truman.
It's good to see you again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And what do we owe the honor of your presence today?
Something must be coming up. Yes,
something is coming up. Something very exciting. Something I know your listeners will be very happy to hear about. It's our family concert.
All right.
This coming Saturday morning. Over at the First United Methodist Church on Thompson Lane, we have our first family concert in many years for the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. I should add, I'm the director of that organization.
Yes. it's all your fault.
That's right. At 10 o'clock a.m., we will start with our hands-on pre-concert activities in the lobby. We'll have things for children of all ages. And this children is especially geared toward the little ones in our lives. But we'll have an instrument petting zoo with some help from students from the Murfreesboro Youth Orchestra. We'll have a face painting station. And that will be, we'll have some help from the Murfreesboro Art League and the St. Clair Senior Center Art Club artists. We'll have an art station.
I understand that all the faces will be painted with musical themes, too.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I hadn't heard that, but that's great. I love it. We'll have an art station. We'll have a dance demonstration by some dancers from Dance Theater of Tennessee. And we'll also have Read to Succeed there. And the children will be reading to Uncas, the literacy dog. And it'll be a really fun carnival-type atmosphere. At 10:30, we'll have an award ceremony.
Now, wait a minute. What's this about a dog?
A dog? Uncas. Do you know Uncas?
That's a real dog, I think.
That is a real dog.
He's German Shepherd.
He's the Read to Succeed dog.
And the dog's going to read to the children?
Well, almost. The kids are going to get to read to the dog.
Well, the kids read to the dog.
And then the dog repeats what they say.
I'm going to be out in the lobby.
Can't wait to see that one.
That's right. Yeah. And then we have some very special awards that we're going to be giving out. It's Musical Excellence and Citizenship Awards, and those are sponsored by the Richard Siegel Foundation and MT Electric Customers Care, Inc. Basically, we have 18 schools represented, and 50 students from this area will be receiving awards for music excellence and good citizenship.
Now, I understand these awards have been are based upon the teachers' selection and review.
That's right, music teachers' recommendation.
Yeah, each of the schools have identified the recipients.
That's right. Very exciting. And I should add that all of those pre-concert activities I just mentioned are free and open to the public. We'd love to have everyone there.
Now, as someone who doesn't have children of that age, will we be entertained that day when we go over, or just watching the happy faces of the children?
I'll be honest, Truman, it is for children of all ages. It's going to be a fun concert. And you're certainly a child of a certain age yourself.
I am.
And at 11 o'clock, the concert will start. And we'll be joined by...
It sounds like a great thing for a grandfather or a grandmother to bring a morning with their grandkids.
Absolutely.
And you can even introduce your grandkids or children to the arts, to the music, and they can see how the other kids are actually responding to it.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly what this is designed for, not only to be entertaining, but also introduce children to the orchestra, introduce them to the instruments of the orchestra. There will be a point during the concert where they'll get to meet each instrument individually, get to hear a little of that instrument and see how that fits into the orchestra. And, you know, people can bring their grandkids or kids here and let them meet the orchestra for the first time. Hmm. At 11 o'clock, the concert will start, and we will be joined with dancers from Dance Theater of Tennessee. They'll be dancing one selection with us. We'll be featuring two area young soloists, two really accomplished middle school, early high school age violinists, Clarissa and Noah. Mm-hmm. They play in the Murfreesboro Youth Orchestra, and they will be playing with the MSO, the first movement of the Bach Double Violin Concerto. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do Peter and the Wolf. Do you know that piece?
Yes, yes.
We'll do Peter and the Wolf. It's a wonderful story, timeless classic. Mm-hmm. It'll be narrated by Mr. Henry Pincus. He comes from WMOT Radio. And then we will also have our first side-by-side with the Murfreesboro Youth Orchestra. Mm-hmm. Those kids will get to sit on stage with our musicians, and we'll play two great selections, one from the Barter Bride and a Dvorak Slavonic dance, and it's music that everyone will love, and it's only an hour-long concert.
Wow, that doesn't seem long enough.
Well, it's long enough. It's just the perfect length, actually, because some of the little ones may not have quite the attention span to go that long. And then some of them, you know, will leave hungry for more, and that's exactly what we want.
You said that the pre-concert activity and the awards ceremony are free, and there's a nominal admission fee for the concert.
That's right. The concert is $5 per person, which is, at that price, we want to fill that church. It's really important we get a great crowd there, and that's a price that we selected so that this concert would certainly be possible for anyone to attend.
You guys bring in all kinds of famous talent into the community. Speaking of that, who have you selected to be the MC of the show Saturday?
The MC of the award ceremony will be a gentleman. He's from this area. His name is Mr. Greg Tucker. Are you familiar with Mr. Tucker?
Yes, I am very familiar with Mr. Tucker. And I don't think you could have picked anyone better to be the MC.
I completely agree.
He has committed himself. Well, actually, I think his wife has committed him into the world of the arts.
Yeah, I hope this doesn't go down in history, but
I am so happy that you are doing this, Joseph, because you've already given so much to the community, and you have become such a major part of the Rutherford County.
Thank you, Trent.
And all that you've done here, and now you're establishing, you're planting the seeds into the youth now, where they're actually going to be part of the art scene and become successful. I'm sure a lot of them will become successful in music and some of the other arts.
Absolutely. You know, I had my first introduction to an orchestra when I was in elementary school. The Alabama Symphony traveled to Florence, Alabama, and we had a field trip, and that's where I heard an orchestra for the first time. And I was probably 7 years old or 8 years old, and I knew that at some point I wanted to do that. And the next year I started playing the trumpet in the school band. You know, there's no telling who will come to this concert that will be a music lover for the rest of their lives because of this concert. And, you know, I believe a symphony orchestra is only as strong as its community outreach and education programs. Mm-hmm. And that's part of my mission as the new music director here, to really fortify those programs and even expand them and include new programs.
I had an experience last Friday that was a very heartwarming experience. The Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra, an ensemble of saxophones and percussion and bass fiddle, did a mini concert on site at the what I call the old soldiers' home, the veterans' nursing home out on Compton Lane. The room was a large room they used for their dining room, I believe. They had cleared it and they brought in. It was so packed with elderly men, mostly a few women, almost every one of them wheelchair bound. They rolled them in. It was packed so tight you couldn't go from one side of the room to the other. And the group opened with several familiar hymns, including an ensemble version of Jesus Loves Me, which was cute. But then they switched over to what was the theme of the concert, the sounds of the 40s in the war era, and they opened with Duke Ellington's Satin Doll. And I was sitting very much in the center of the group so I could take some pictures, and I had goosebumps, and I could just feel the whole group just kind of swell up. And of course, these are not guys that can jump up and dance to it, but I saw more fingers drumming on the table and feet.
Wow.
And the fellow sitting next to me was obviously spastic and didn't control it. He was trying to clap and was making gestures, putting his hands together, and he couldn't get them to come together. And after they went through, Ain't Misbehaving, and just the sounds that just, you know, bring you back. And it brings me back because that was what my parents played at home when I was small. But most of these fellas, one of them I talked to at great length, Jimmy Jones, former Greyhound bus driver.
Yes, from one of my favorite people in the whole world.
Yeah, and neat guy. He's out there. And they ended up, the last piece was In the Mood, Glenn Miller's In the Mood, and one of the old fellas got up, and one of the cute little attendants, service people there, caregivers, stepped up and they danced. And that ended up on the front page of the Sunday paper.
I saw that picture. That was
inspiring.
And
there were tears and emotions all over the place. And this has got to be something. But when you talk about outreach, you know, to share with them. And I should mention that it was no cost to the Veterans Administration, because the Middle Tennessee Antique Auto Club contributed $500. The musicians were willing to work within that budget and, you know, provided the concert. And it was, I don't know, 30 years from now, I hope I can get in a situation where somebody will do that for me, because it was quite an experience.
Now, you know, nothing inspires your emotions and your memories more than sound. And you think back. I've told you before, my mom called me about 3 months before she died, and she needed to talk to me. And for some reason, I never erased that voice from my telephone. And I have still got it. About every month or 2 months, it'll come up and say, do you want to keep or let that? And I can't let it go. But, you know, when I'm at some special, really special function, like someone has died, somebody was in the military or somebody was in law enforcement or whatever, whenever I hear taps, Amazing Grace that is played by the bagpipes, something like that. It just, like you said, it chills just run all over me, and I can't help from tearing up, because
I know
that brings back special memories for you. And it's just something about music that will always be a major part of our lives, because
absolutely
a lot of the movies that still I still enjoy watching, it wouldn't be the same if it wasn't for the way that the music plays a part of what's going on in each person's life inside that theater. It's amazing. And people, I mean, who are missing out on the Murfreesboro Symphony here, we have got one of the best groups anywhere in the nation, in the country.
That's right.
And it's sitting right here in your own backyard. It's not that expensive. and it's easy to get to. And you got a great venue over at the Methodist Church over on Thompson Lane. I mean, it's just something special that everybody should at least experience once.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned the church. You know, we're so thankful to them for allowing us to have our concerts there. It couldn't be more convenient. Right off of Thompson Lane, mm-hmm. In the heart of Murfreesboro nearly, and parking is free. The acoustics are great. There's not a bad seat in the house. You know, we have tickets for our regular concerts. We have tickets at different price points, but honestly, you know, I love the $10 seats as much as I love the $40 seats. I probably shouldn't say that out loud, but it's true.
As long as you can hear it.
Oh, exactly.
Before we go any further, we had a caller that called in, and we don't want to miss this. And you've got the question, Greg.
Yeah, the caller asked, prompted, I guess, by our earlier conversation, what tribes were in Murfreesboro during the time of the Trail of Tears? All right, first let's get to the time period. The Trail of Tears was occasioned by an individual who actually spent a good bit of time in and around Murfreesboro, President Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And a great leader in his time, but he obviously had a very little respect or appreciation for the Indian tribes of that period. Made his reputation originally in the Creek Wars, the Indian Wars. He moved, and the question, what tribes? Well, I remember as a kid thinking it was unusual. All the Tennessee Indian tribes in this early period started with a C. You had the Cherokees to the east, the Creeks to the south, the Chickasaw and the Choctaw to the west.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those were moved in this Indian removal period. Mm. The Trail of Tears, however, was primarily the Cherokee, because the Cherokee, what remained of them, were centered in North Georgia, East Tennessee, and that area. Middle Tennessee, actually there were no tribes resident in Middle Tennessee during the period that we were talking about, when the Lytles and such were coming in here.
Mm-hmm.
Middle Tennessee was kind of reserved as a hunting ground. There was quite a bit of competition between tribes up to about the end of the 1700s in the area. So the only Indians that would have been in Murfreesboro in the 1830s would have been, not to use a pejorative term, but half-breeds or those who had broken away from the tribe, mm-hmm. and, you know, were living in the settlements. Remember, in the 1830s, Murfreesboro had been here for 20 years by then, and was a fairly well-established, urban community by that time. I do know that the Trail of Tears passed through parts of Rutherford County, and there are differences of opinion. So during the actual movement of the Trail of Tears, there were Cherokee, I'm sure, that were actually going through the county on their way to Oklahoma, where they were being resettled. Exactly the path of the Trail of Tears, I think most historians agree that it came in about where Reedaville is, mm-hmm. entered the county there, coming through Cannon County. I believe that it didn't go directly through Murfreesboro. I think the better road at that time led up to Jefferson and then on out on the west side, northwest side. So, taking the question just as it's asked, what tribes were in Murfreesboro during the period of the Trail of Tears, I think probably only the Cherokee as a tribe came through this area. The other Indians were being moved all to Oklahoma, but the Trail of Tears had a number of different branches depending on where they were moving from. But Jackson literally cleared the Indians from everything east of the Mississippi except for the renegade bunch that went off into the Appalachian Hills, now called the Smoky Mountains, and until they were finally given a reservation up
now
there.
That was Cherokees, right?
Yeah, they were the Cherokees, and eventually they got a reservation, mm-hmm. because there were quite a few of them that disappeared into the mountains and the hills, and the white expansion just kind of went around them,
mm-hmm.
and eventually they were given a reservation up there. So we do have one reservation bordering Tennessee. I think it's mostly in North Carolina.
Now, was that only the tribes that were east of the Mississippi that were in the Trail of Tears?
Yeah,
or were there some in the north and the west?
None of the western tribes were moved into Oklahoma at this time. There may have been some coming down from north of Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
but he was clearing really his part of the world, which was, you know, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, North Georgia, and put them out in Oklahoma.
Now, how did they actually travel? I mean, did they travel by horseback? Were they carried
through? Most of them walked, and what little horses they had were usually dragging what few possessions, or they did have elderly people that, you know, couldn't walk, and women and children. So, you know, some of them were on what, not wagons, but they were dragging on litters, mm-hmm. you know, behind the few horses they had. The Cherokees, it's interesting, had really an advanced civilization by those standards, mm-hmm. and they had a capital in North Georgia. I visited mm-hmm. the site of it, but all that was cleared at the point of a gun during Jackson's period here.
That was one of the, I guess, worst periods that we've ever had in this country. Of course, you have to relate, I guess, to what what they had to go through. The
emotions, well, it was a popular thing to do then, because the immigrants, which we all were, wanted the land, mm-hmm. and the Indians were on the land, so they cleared it.
And like you said earlier, the Cherokees were fairly civilized. I mean, really, for that
particular period. Well, another prominent name, Rutherford, mm-hmm. Griffith Rutherford. That is what he did that made him a popular hero. He didn't. He was very ineffective against the British, mm-hmm. but he destroyed a whole bunch of the cities, you'd call them, the villages of the Cherokee up in East Tennessee, mm-hmm. which opened it up so the white population could expand across the mountains.
And we want to let you know that the last part of the show is brought to you by Pearl and Howerton Automotive at 2006 North Main Street in Shebbleville. And you can reach them at 1-800-264-6800 or pearlhowerton.com. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 20-minute drive, and it's on your left just before you get into downtown Shebbleville. See what they've got, talk to the nice people, and really enjoy your afternoon.
Southeastern Tire of Murfreesboro has the right tires for your vehicle. Perhaps you're a rugged individual who enjoys off-roading. They have a tire for you. Or maybe you're a rap star driving around on 26-inch rims. They have a tire for that. You're a mom who's in the carpool lane daily. They have a tire for your minivan. Let's say you're a wealthy trial lawyer who drives a Lamborghini. Yes, they have a tire for you too. Maybe you drive one of those new electric vehicles. Hey, they have a tire for you. Southeastern Tire Service has a tire for every personality. They're on Broad Street, a tire or two away from Chevy of Murfreesboro.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation, right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative skilled nursing and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Healthcare, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
If you want to get some barbecue, I'll tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
You are listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now back to Truman Jones.
We certainly don't want to start a fight right here in the what do you call this part, Brian? What is this?
Studio.
The studio. Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I'm not familiar with all those terms like that.
Technical.
Are you talking about our guest in the green room?
Do we have a green room?
Well, sure.
Who's in the green room?
I'm not sure. Who's in the green room? You tell
me. Who's in the green room, Joseph?
I think related to somebody here.
Joseph, who's in the green room? If you're going to be on my show, you got to talk, Joseph. Nobody
answer
can
questions.
Don't
it's Greg's lovely, Greg's like lovely bride.
Oh, is she up here? Oh, my goodness. I wish you would come in here and talk to us a little bit.
Tell her she can bring her cup.
Yeah, she can bring her cup. She's such a sweet lady. My goodness. And she means so much to the Murfreesboro Symphony. She really does.
Absolutely.
And I know you enjoy working with her.
Oh, I love working with Mentriette.
Is Mentriette going to be there Saturday morning at the...
She will absolutely be there. She'll be there even before everything gets started at 10 a.m., mm-hmm. But at 10 a.m. we'll have our pre-concert activities in the lobby. Mm-hmm. 10:30, our award ceremony for the Musicianship Excellence and Citizenship Award, sponsored by the Siegel Foundation and MT Electric. And then at 11 o'clock, we'll have our family concert. Again, mm-hmm. this is at First United Methodist Church on Thompson Lane. $5 tickets for everybody. And I was going to say something else. Oh, how do they get tickets? Well, they're available at the door. They can call the symphony office at 898-1862, or they can contact our website at murfreesborosymphony.com.
And if they have any other questions, then you'll be there available, and Mentriette will be there available. Is that correct?
I will be there long before anybody comes, so I'll be there.
So I guess when you have to do everything, you have to get there well before, and you stay there well after everything is completed.
My wife is a master or mistress at behind the scenes.
Uh-huh.
She likes to be behind the scenes.
But I tell you what, you couldn't go on without her, could you?
Absolutely not.
I really appreciate what all of you guys do, and Mentriette, bless your heart. You are a major part of our community, and you do a lot of things behind the scenes, and you don't want any credit for it. I know how that is, and you're the type of quality person that we really enjoy having here. So thank you for coming with Greg and being here today.
Definitely. Thanks for all you do, Truman, as well.
Thank you, Joseph. Anything you got to say, Greg?
Yeah, before the year's out, we're going to talk about the background, history, and evolution of our former sheriff. I promise it.
Oh, we're going to talk about Robert T. Goodwin.
One of his relatives.
Oh, okay. I'm afraid that we're going to have to wrap this show up, because I always hate leaving here, especially when you're on, Greg. But tomorrow we have Jimmy Earls, who is a... part of history himself in Rutherford County, especially at MTSU, and one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.